The United States is sending some diplomats away from Baghdad. It's moved some military in to help with security. The militant Islamic State of Iraq and Levant or Syria, ISIL, ISIS by some accounts, has taken over parts of the country and it's threatening Baghdad. And that's forced Washington's national security apparatus into overdrive. Blaise Michetal is director of the Bipartisan Policy Center's Foreign Policy Project. He's writing about how the rise of ISIS and reveals how some telling things about the alliances in the Middle East, and he joins us now. Good morning. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning. Glad to be with you.
All right. So what is it we need to learn, the State Department and the diplomatic apparatus about this? Is this simply a Sunni and Shiite battle in some new form, or is it more than that?
Well, I think it's very clearly a Sunni-Shiite battle, but the interesting thing is how alliances are being redrawn within factions in the Middle East on top of that Sunni-Shiite sectarian war. And here you see Iran getting in the game to back the Shiite government in Baghdad. But on the other hand, you see Sunni Turks thinking long and hard about whether they should be concerned about the rise of Sunni Islamists that they've actually backed in the Syrian war. And you see the Kurds in northern Iraq contemplating whether this is their moment to break away from Iraq and disengage from that country altogether. And so you have different groups deciding where they should align themselves in this war, and helping form the right coalition is probably the most important thing the U.S. government is doing right now.
How well do you think the U.S. government is prepared for something like this?
Look, ISIS is not a new group. It hasn't sprung out of the ground overnight. They took Fallujah in Iraq at the beginning of this year, and they've been active in Syria for longer than that. So we've known about ISIS and we've known about the threat, and they haven't been shy about telling us that this is something that they want. They want to take over Syria and Iraq. It's in their name. I think the better question is, how well are we aware of the situation within the Iraqi military? Were we aware that they were so fragile that they were going to lay down arms and run away, as they basically did in Mosul earlier this week? So the question is, how well have we prepared the Iraqi military to stand up to this threat? I think we're going to find out in the next couple of days.
It seems like maybe in the long term here, there has been insufficient communication between maybe state and defense. I mean, there was a status of forces agreement that we nominally honored in pulling the troops out, but yet they were the Iraqi military was supposed to be ready, and it seems like the State Department should have had something to say about whether the political structure left in Iraq was doing what it said with respect to including the Sunnis in the government and sharing the revenue and so forth, and whether that might have not given ISIS so much momentum.
I think that's exactly right. I think there's a question of how well we were still connected to the structures of the Iraqi military and understanding whether the gains that they had made, the material that we had supplied and the training that we had given them were still being used effectively. And I think there's a question of how engaged we were politically with making sure that the gains that Iraq made politically were being honored by this government. As President Obama said in his speech on Friday, clearly, part of the situation here is a result of the fact that the Maliki government in Iraq was not spreading the wealth equally, was not governing in a way that was seen as equitable to all the different sectarian groups in Iraq. So there's definitely a political failing here. But there's also a question of whether action had been taken in Syria earlier or the Syria crisis had been resolved earlier, whether you would have had the spillover effect of violence. So there's really both those issues. There's a security issue coming from Syria, and there's a political issue stemming from Baghdad.
And with regards to Baghdad, as the military has, they've withdrawn, but there's still about 5,000 people working on behalf of the United States in Baghdad. It's the largest embassy that we have in the world. So how much of an influence have they had over security in that country?
That's a good question, and I think we're going to see in the coming days how easily or how well the Iraqi military is able to start launching their counterattacks. We've seen them be able to hold at least the territory closest to Baghdad, and whether they're able to regroup and move forward is going to be a direct result of the training that they've received and the arms that they've received. And I think what we're seeing now is a political push, largely led by the embassy, to try to get political concessions from Maliki and the Baghdad government. I think the security training has already been given and has to go into effect. I think now the political pressure that the U.S. can apply is really going to be crucial.
And do you think that it might be that Americans in some capacity, maybe not as soldiers shooting, but in some capacity will need to be installed in Iraq at this point?
I think there's going to be a lot of resistance to putting, as President Obama said, boots on the ground. I think in terms of putting in place political advisors and maybe revisiting some of the stability and reconstruction type activities in terms of advising the government, if the sort of security can be reinstated across Iraq, I think that would be a very important activity for the U.S. to reengage in Iraq.
And similarly, we know that the State Department is pulling some people out of the Baghdad embassy, but the vast majority are staying put. How important do you think it is that the United States keeps that embassy workforce strong, keeps most people in place for both, frankly, for the practical reasons on the ground and for the optics worldwide?
Right. So obviously there has to be some sort of triage going on. And I think it's important for both essential workers to stay, and I think it's important, as we've already seen, for some security and reinforcements to arrive. And as you said, the optical issue is very important, especially as we see Iran contemplating playing a greater role in assisting Baghdad in dealing with this threat. And it's really a question of who's going to be the Iraq's biggest partner and ally going forward. And if we see the Iranians step up and take a bigger role in this crisis, then we'll see Iraq fall even further under Iran's sway, which won't serve U.S. benefits, and because of the Shiite government in Iran, won't serve the majority of Iraq's benefits either.
And for the State Department, what does this whole situation do to its ability to have credibility and influence anywhere at this point for the next several years?
Well, I think it presents a really big challenge for the State Department, but also a much bigger role for the State Department, really, than the Pentagon going forward. And you obviously have to create some sort of political changes within Iraq to be able to deal with this situation, but you also have to deal diplomatically with the entire region. You have the Kurds in Erbil that you have to deal with and try to stand them down from declaring their own state. You have to deal with Turkey, which is a NATO ally of the United States and should be dealing with this threat. But we haven't seen them make any condemnation at all of ISIS. In fact, they've been supporting ISIS in Syria over the past 3 years. And obviously you have, at the same time as you have this conflict going on in Iraq, you have nuclear diplomacy going on with Iran this week, in fact. And so this gives the State Department a lot of balls to juggle, a lot of balls in the air. But it's really going to be them that have to lead this going forward.
We're speaking with Blaise Michetal. He's director of the Bipartisan Policy Center's Foreign Policy Project. And Blaise, regarding Syria especially, there's been a lot of criticism that, frankly, Washington has just moved too slowly. And in fact, the ambassador to Syria recently, in the past couple of months, resigned, saying that himself. How does the system here, the apparatus of the national security agencies, hinder some quick decisions on this?
Well, I think one of the issues that we've seen arise during the Iraq and Afghanistan wars and perhaps be forgotten is the importance of coordination between state and DOD. And we've seen some important mechanisms be set up for that during the last decade, such as Section 1206 and 1207 authorities, which are ways for DOD and state to together decide to jointly fund important security and development projects to address fragile states and situations like this. And partly as a result of budgetary issues and sequestration, we've seen funding for those sorts of programs really be reduced. And we've also seen a greater role be placed on centralization of both foreign policy decision making in this administration and the NSC and the White House. So I think in some ways, we need to relearn some of the lessons that we learned in the Iraq War about how we can quickly work within both bureaucracies of the state and DOD. And I think those lessons will probably need to be relearned as we deal with the ISIS threat.
And just in a more practical way, closer to home in the next few days, what is likely to happen with the embassy in Baghdad should ISIS march into Baghdad in some manner. They promised suicide bombings as a prelude to that. Do you think the state is actually preparing to just evacuate the place at this point?
Well, we've seen them say that they have planes at the ready to do that if necessary. We've also seen them bring in extra security to make sure that the embassy can be protected. So I think that while you might see additional evacuation of unnecessary personnel, I think there's going to be a strong inclination to at least keep the embassy manned, not evacuated completely, both as a statement of confidence that Baghdad can be protected and that the central government is doing what it needs to do, and also as an optical reason to not abandon Iraq altogether. So I don't think you'll see a complete evacuation, no.
And Blaise, we are running out of time, but I do want to ask you about this. By some accounts, the militant group ISIS, they've stolen $500 million worth of money, which they could do whatever they want with. To what degree can the U.S. control their spending?
That's a fantastic question. And assuming that that spending is going towards the recruiting of additional fighters, bringing in new fighters from across the Middle East, across the Muslim world, perhaps from Europe, from America, if that money is going to be to pay for salaries, there's not much we can do, because that's just cash handouts. If that money is flowing to buy arms and weapons, then we have much better tools in place through our Treasury Department to try to control the flow of arms and try to track some of that money.
Blaise Mishtal is director of the Bipartisan Policy Center's Foreign Policy Project. Thanks so much for joining us.
Our pleasure.